Chapter 15. Engines of War. The Forge's massive Titan foundry was actually a collection of cyclopean structures that filled an area of 5 square kilometres not far from the complex's southern gate. It was a self-contained manufactory with facilities for creating everything from adamantine skeletal segments to tempered plasteel armour plate, and everything in between. Broad trackways, made to accommodate heavy load haulers, connected to the towering structure at the centre of the foundry, the giant assembly building where up to 4 of the gargantuan war machines could be built at the same time. When a Titan was completed, it would then be handed over to the adepts of the Legio Gladius with solemn ceremony, and the engine would take its first steps to join its brethren at the Legion's fortress some 10 kilometres to the north. Nemiel and his squad encountered the first of the Scutari patrols at the edge of the foundry sector. These were well-equipped troops in static positions, manning las cannons or heavy stubbers, and sweeping the perimeter every few seconds with advanced Auspex arrays. He halted the squad in the shadow of an idle manufactory and waved Brother Ascalon over. "It looks like the assembly building is the only part of the foundry in operation," he said, nodding towards the towering, well-lit structure. "Magos Archoy isn't taking any chances. He's extended his security perimeter to the very edge of the sector. Can you think of a way we can get past those Auspex units? It's imperative we find out what Archoy is doing." The Tech Marine considered the problem for a moment and nodded. "All of the facilities here are powered by the thermal reactors inside the volcano," he said. "The power feeds are run through utility tunnels that connect all the buildings. They likely be covered by automated security systems, but I believe I can bypass them." Nemiel nodded. "Let's go. We don't have much time until dawn." Ascalon led the squad back the way they'd come to an access door at the far side of the manufactory. While Nemiel and the rest of the Dark Angel stood watch for more Mechanicum patrols, the Tech Marine bypassed the door's security system and slipped inside. 15 seconds later, he returned, beckoning for Nemiel. "There are several small cybernetic sentries prowling the building," Ascalon whispered. "They follow predictable routes and use their surveyors to scan for signs of heat or motion, but they're very short-ranged. Stay close, and move only when I say." The Tech Marine led the squad across the dark floor of the manufactory, slipping between massive stamping machines and automated spot-welding arrays. Ascalon traced a winding, deliberate route through the plant, pausing at times and listening for the telltale ultrasonic whine of an Auspex transmitter. After several long minutes, they reached a short, squat, permacrete structure at the centre of the manufactory floor. Ascalon located a plasteel door in the side of the structure and quickly disarmed its sensors, then led the squad inside. Within, a cluster of giant metal-clad conduits rose like fat silver worms from a circular hole in the middle of the bare permacrete floor and connected to large junction boxes on 3 of the 4 walls. Control panels along the wall beside the door monitored the power feed to the manufactory systems. Ascalon stepped to the edge of the hole and located a set of metal rungs that descended into the access tunnel below. Hot, dry air, smelling of ozone and sulphur, wafted up from the depths. "We'll follow the tunnel to the access point underneath the assembly building," he said to the squad. "Keep your eyes open, brothers. There may be cybernetic sentries in the tunnel as well." "What do we do if we see one?" Cole asked. "Shoot it," the Tech Marine replied with a shrug, "and hope that it can't get a signal off before it's destroyed." Cole and Nemiel exchanged grim looks and followed Ascalon down into the tunnel. The utility tunnel was tall and wide, its circular walls lined with thick metal conduits stamped with strings of binaric code. The Tech Marine headed off down the tunnel in the general direction of the foundry, pausing from time to time to read the stamps on several of the conduits to his left. They travelled for more than 2 kilometres, following the trunk labels through one intersection after another. Finally, Ascalon battle-signed for the squad to halt and sank slowly into a crouch. Nemiel moved silently forward and knelt down beside the Tech Marine.
"What's wrong?"
he whispered. Ascalon raised his chin slightly like a hound tasting a scent.
"Faint surveyor pulse emanating from farther down the tunnel," he said. "We're outside its extreme range."
The Redemptor raised his bolt pistol.
"A sentry?"
"Yes," Ascalon replied. "It's a Sigma sequence pulse, so it's not one of the small patrol units. Most likely it's a stationary unit, like a sentry gun."
"Then it's probably sitting right at the feet of a ladder leading up to the foundry,"
Nemiel said.
"Any way to outflank it?"
Ascalon shook his head. "Unlikely.
but there might be a way to temporarily incapacitate it.
Tell me.
The Tech Marine pointed at the conduits lining the walls around them. This is Category 9 conduit. It's the most heavily shielded insulator available, he explained. But there's so much power going through these lines that there's still significant electromagnetic radiation leaking into the tunnel.
And how does that help us exactly?
If I cut into the conduits, I can use my armor's power plant to send a feedback surge down the line towards the sentry unit, Ascalon said. A powerful enough spike in electromagnetic radiation will overload its Auspex receptors and force a reset. That will render it blind and unable to communicate for approximately 30 seconds.
Approximately?
Nemiel said. If I could see the type of sentry unit, I could tell you down to the millisecond, Ascalon said. As it is, it could be one of half a dozen models. 30 seconds is my worst-case estimate. Nemiel nodded.
Get to work.
The Redemptor went back to the squad and told them what was happening, while Ascalon quickly marked out which conduits to tap and went to work. With deft movements, he drew out a small, powerful plasma torch and cut open a half dozen of the steel tubes. Then he opened an access panel on the side of his backpack power unit and began attaching a number of heavy-gauge cables to the contacts inside. Several minutes later, the Tech Marine was ready. He glanced back at Nemiel, who gave him the nod to proceed. Ascalon quickly attached the cables to the power lines inside the conduits. His armor stiffened abruptly. Immediately, Nemiel saw the Tech Marine's status indicators begin flashing urgently on his helmet display. The core temp of his power unit spiked beyond allowable tolerances and continued to climb. Ascalon's physio monitors began to fluctuate as well, as feedback coursed through the suit's neurointerfaces and into his body.
"There's smoke rising from his power plant," Cole whispered urgently.
"Let him finish," Nemiel hissed. "It's the only way."
Seconds passed. Nemiel watched Ascalon's indicators pulse from green to amber, and then amber to red. Without warning, a fountain of sparks shot from the servo arm housing between the Tech Marine's shoulders. Ascalon spasmed, throwing out his hands and shoving himself away from the power conduits. The Tech Marine fell backwards, stiff-legged, and crashed into the far side of the tunnel. Nemiel and the rest of the squad rushed to the downed Astartes. The air around Ascalon shimmered with heat, radiating from his overloaded power unit. The Tech Marine turned his head. Squawks of sound crackled from his helmet speaker. Nemiel didn't have to hear the words to know what Ascalon was trying to say.
"He sent the pulse," Nemiel told the squad. "Brother Marthis, take point. Sergeant Cole, help me with Brother Ascalon. Let's move."
The Astartes sprang into action, charging down the tunnel behind Marthis, who advanced with his melter gun held ready. Cole and Nemiel brought up the rear, dragging the limp form of Ascalon between them. 300 meters down the tunnel, the passageway fed into a large, square structure that echoed the permacrete blockhouse they'd entered the manufactory. The plasteel rungs of another ladder climbed upward, presumably into the foundry's assembly building. Sitting at its feet, just as Nemiel suspected, crouched a matte black sentry gun. Armed with a turret-mounted twin-linked las cannon, the automated unit crouched on four stubby legs like a hungry spider waiting for prey. Nemiel could hear the hum of its power unit as they approached. Its twin guns were aimed straight down the tunnel at the approaching Astartes. A single shot would cut through their armor like tissue.
"Up the ladder!" he ordered the squad. "Get up and get out of sight!"
Marthis stepped around the sentry gun and began climbing at once. Vardas paused at the bottom rungs, his heavy bolter slung at his side.
"What about Ascalon?"
he said.
"We'll manage,"
the Redemptor shot back.
"Now hurry, brother."
Vardas started his climb, with Ephrael hot on his heels. Nemiel consulted his internal chrono. They had just 12 seconds left. He looked to Cole as they reached the bottom of the ladder.
"We need to find a way to shut off the sentry gun," he said. "There must be an access panel."
Ascalon shook his head sharply. The ceramite edges of his helmet scraped against his gorget, suggesting he'd sustained damage to his armor's muscle fibers.
"No,"
he said, his voice coming through his helmet's damaged speaker as a tortured croak.
"Can't risk it. I can climb."
"All right," Nemiel growled.
"You go first. Cole, you're next. Help him as much as you can."
He would stay until the last moment. If they ran out of time, he would tear open one of the sentry gun's access panels and try to shut it down. Ascalon grabbed hold of the metal rungs and started climbing, seeming to gather strength with each lunge of his legs.
Cole was right behind him, ready to provide a judicious shove if the tech marine faltered. Nemiel counted the seconds and checked the sentry gun for likely access points. Vardis and Ephrael leaned over the hole, grabbed Ascalon's folded servo arm, and hauled him bodily up into the chamber above. Cole raced up behind him.
"Clear!"
he hissed to Nemiel. The Redemptor leapt for the rungs and scrambled upwards as quickly as he could. The timer on his display hit zero when he was halfway up. There was a series of rapid clicks and whirring sounds directly beneath him as the sentry gun sprang back to life. Hands reached down and grabbed the edges of his pauldrons. Nemiel felt himself yanked upwards like a sack of grain and deposited roughly on the permacrete of the upper floor. The Astartes froze, listening intently. Below them, the sentry gun clattered and whirred a moment more, then resumed its quiet vigil. Nemiel looked over at Ascalon's prone form.
"Any sign of alarm?"
The tech marine reached slowly for his helmet and undid its clasps. Ascalon pulled the helm away, revealing a sweat-streaked face stippled with broken blood vessels. A trickle of blood seeped from his nose and the corners of his eyes.
"No change,"
he said in a husky voice. Blood slicked the tech marine's teeth. Nemiel rolled over and rose to his knees beside Ascalon.
"How badly are you hurt?"
he asked quietly. Ascalon chuckled faintly.
"I'm no apothecary, brother," he replied. "The machinery of a living body is too complex even for me."
He levered himself to a sitting position with a grunt.
"Armor integrity is at 65%. Power levels at 40%. Muscle fiber reflexes compromised, and I think I melted the motors on my servo arm."
Nemiel frowned.
"You didn't mention that tapping those conduits would likely kill you,"
he growled. The tech marine managed a grin.
"It didn't seem relevant at the time."
He extended his hand.
Help me up, please."
Cole and Nemiel hauled Ascalon upright. The Redemptor glanced warily at the edge of the hole.
"Can the gun sense us up here?"
"To a limited extent, yes,"
the tech marine said.
"But activity overhead won't trigger a combat response. It's down there to guard the approaches to the building, and that's all."
"All right. Where do we go from here?"
Ascalon looked about the chamber. It was identical to the conduit room at the manufactory, only substantially larger. He nodded to the metal door across the chamber.
"That leads out into a sub-level beneath the main assembly floor. From there, we'll be able to access almost every part of the building."
Nemiel checked his chrono again. It was little more than an hour until dawn.
"A building like this is bound to have catwalks along the upper stories, correct?"
Ascalon nodded.
"Three levels of them in this case. You can look out over the entire assembly area from some of them."
"Then that's where we need to be," he said. "Let's go."
Cole took point after that, leading the squad through the confines of the sub-level according to whispered directions from Brother Ascalon until they reached a narrow stairwell that climbed upwards into the assembly building proper. Weapons ready, they made their way carefully up the permacrete stairs, listening for the slightest sound of movement. Nemiel could hear the sharp crackle of arc torches and the snarl of power tools reverberating through the walls, the steel-on-steel noise like the sounds of a distant battlefield. They climbed up several stories, past one dimly lit landing after another, until Nemiel signalled for a halt.
"This is far enough," he said. "We don't need to get all the way to the top. I just want a good view of what's going on,"
he told them. He turned to Ascalon.
"Is there any risk of sensors at this point?"
No,
the tech marine replied.
"We're past their detection perimeter at this point."
"All right. Marthis, you and Vardis stay here and cover the stairwell. Cole, Ascalon and Ephrael, you're with me."
Nemiel crouched at the plasteel door and cracked it slowly open. Beyond, the gantryway was lit with red light from below. His auto-senses picked up the reek of melted plas, petrochemicals and heated metal. Distantly, he could make out the sharp blurts and squeals of binaric cant, as well as a number of voices speaking in Gothic. The Redemptor concentrated, but he could not make out what they were saying over the squalling of the machinery. He surveyed the gantryway carefully for as far as he could see, checking for any signs of movement, then went back and checked again. Satisfied there was no one within the immediate area, he opened the door the rest of the way and crept quietly onto the plasteel catwalk. The assembly building was rectangular in shape, with an open floor plan surrounded by six huge niches that stretched from floor to ceiling. Giant servo arms were set into either side of these niches, able to climb to different heights along trackways set into the permacrete, and huge cranes hung from similar tracks high overhead. The Titans were assembled inside each niche, starting with a skeletal structure of the feet and working upwards to the head. Nemiel found himself crouched on a section of third-story gantryway at one end of the building. The stories above him were plunged into darkness without so much as an emergency lamp burning. Below, red light rose up from the assembly floor like the glow of an actual forge. Gusts of hot air, stirred by industrial-grade arc torches, blew against his faceplate. A rustle of iron links, musical and cold, chimed from the deep shadows high above the floor. Hundreds of chains had been suspended from the assembly building's ceiling, twisting and clinking together in the restless air. Each chain, more than 50 meters in length, had been strung with dozens of hooks. And on each hook hung a fresh corpse. Nemiel saw the bodies of Tanagran Dragoons, Skitari, even the mangled bodies of dead Praetorians, along with the smaller figures of Tech Adepts and half-mechanical Magi. Their corpses had been riddled by bullets, or torn apart by energy bolts, sliced open by power claws, or crushed by mechanical fists, and their fluids leaked from them in a steady, dripping rain onto the hulls of the enormous vehicles below. There were six of them, Nemiel saw. Their chassis were so wide that they could only be arrayed in a single file that stretched from one end of the assembly building to the other. Their armoured hulls were supported by dual sets of treads on each of the vehicle's flanks, with a sloped front that rose like a sheer-sided hillock more than two stories high. Void shield generators studded the vehicle's sides, along with automated quad laser and mega bolter emplacements, but Nemiel scarcely noticed them. His gaze was drawn to the enormous cannon built into the center line of the vehicle's hull. A complicated series of hoists and giant braces surrounding the cannon's barrel indicated that it was meant to be elevated and fired like a conventional artillery piece. The aft section of each vehicle was segmented like the body of a giant insect and appeared to be even more heavily armored than the rest of the hull.
"What in the Emperor's name are those things?"
Cole hissed. It was the first time Nemiel had ever heard the sergeant taken aback. Tech Marine Ascalon carefully eased into a crouch beside them. His eyes widened as he saw the machines on the assembly floor.
"Siege guns," he said, his voice tinged with awe, "but far larger than any I've ever seen before. Those look like macro cannons, fitted to a custom hull."
He pointed to the nearest vehicle.
"See those dual treads? Those aren't part of a contiguous drivetrain. They are distinct drive units, similar in size and power to the ones used on Baneblade super-heavy tanks. There are three to a side, and that's just to form the foundation for each vehicle."
Tech adepts were crawling like ants over each of the war machines, working feverishly along the armored hull beneath the rain of gore. Symbols had been scrawled in blood at regular intervals along each machine's flank, but Nemiel couldn't make them out at such a distance. The Redemptor noticed that the vehicle closest to them had a large open hatch on the top deck to the right of the huge gun.
"What do you make of that?"
he said, pointing to the two tech adepts working in the well beneath the hatchway. Ascalon leaned slightly forward, peering intently at the opening. His eyes widened.
"It's an MIU interface chamber," he said. "A neural interface link, much like we employ on our Titans. It looks like they're refurbishing the control leads and making it ready for use." "So a single operator could control one of these behemoths?"
Nemiel said. The Tech Marine nodded.
"Of course. They're big, but far less demanding than a bipedal Titan," he replied, "and the MIU makes it nearly impossible for them to be used if captured."
Nemiel nodded grimly, his gaze rising to the collection of corpses dangling in the air before them.
"Now we know what happened to the Dragoons covering the southern approach," he said, his voice thick with revulsion. "Not to mention a good many of the Forge's own personnel. Magos Archoy is a madman. This whole thing smacks of some obscene, superstitious ritual. How could someone like Horus Lupercal be connected to such debased behavior?"
Memories of the foul things he'd witnessed at Sarosh rose unbidden in Nemiel's mind. He forced them aside with an effort of will and a savage shake of his head. Cole tore his gaze away from the repellent sight and caught a glimpse of movement on the assembly floor.
"Here comes the High Priest himself,"
he growled, pointing to the narrow lane at the right of the parked war machines. Nemiel straightened, craning his head around to see Magos Archoy walking down the line of vehicles. A pair of tech adepts followed a discreet distance behind the Magos, their hands tucked into their sleeves, while a knot of four uniformed men dogged Archoy's heels and studied the siege guns critically. One of the men was conferring with the Magos, speaking to him in urgent tones. It took a moment for Nemiel to recognize the uniform he wore.
15th Hesperan Lancers,
he murmured,
assigned to Horus's 53rd Expeditionary Fleet. It looks like some of the rebels stayed behind when their ground forces left the planet. They must have been meeting with that traitor Archoy and arranging delivery of the machines when we arrived.
And they've been biding their time ever since, waiting for the right opportunity,
Cole snarled.
That damned Magos has embedded his warriors into every one of our combat units. We've got to warn the Primarch, or we may well have a massacre on our hands.
At just that moment, Brother Vardas leaned out from the stairwell.
Movement on the stairs,
he hissed.
Coming from above and below.
Cole stared back at Vardas.
Above and below simultaneously?
Vardas nodded.
They're moving quietly. Might be a pair of patrols.
Suddenly, Ascalon pointed across the cavernous space.
I can see movement on the opposite gantryway,
he said quietly.
They're carrying something.
Nemiel felt the hairs on the back of his neck go up. He looked down at the assembly room floor. Magos Archoy was standing there surrounded by a circle of bemused rebels. The traitor's hooded head was tilted upwards, looking directly at him.
They know we're here,
he cried, drawing his croziers from his belt.
It's a trap!
Lasgun fire erupted from the gantryway on the opposite side of the building. Red bolts hissed through the air, gouging craters from the permacrete wall in a string of sharp thunderclaps. A heavy bolter began to hammer away, spitting traces across the intervening space in a series of measured bursts. Rounds struck many of the hanging chains, splitting their links and dumping their grisly cargo to the ground. Nemiel fired a burst in the direction of the heavy bolter and activated his vox speed.
"Invincible reason, this is Brother Nemiel!"
he cried.
"Can you read me?"
He was answered with a rising screech of static. The Redemptor went through a score of frequencies and got the same result. Archoy's traitors were jamming the vox channels. Fire erupted from the stairwell behind Nemiel. Autoguns clattered and lasgun spat bursts of light at Marthes and Vardas, who responded with a brace of fragmentation grenades. Marthes levelled his melter gun down the stairs and fired a howling blast, then ducked out onto the gangway.
"There's a platoon of Skitarii coming up the stairs!"
he shouted. Dark figures were rushing at them along the gangway from the far side of the building, firing bursts of lasgun fire as they advanced. Cole and Ephrael exchanged fire with them, dropping several with well-aimed shots. A burst of heavy bolter fire answered them, stitching the two Astartes with a stream of shells. Both warriors staggered beneath the hits, but their armor turned aside the blows.
"Marthes, put a shot on that gangway!"
Nemiel yelled as he leaned over the thin metal rail and leveled his pistol at Magos Archoy. The traitor didn't even flinch as the Redemptor laid his aiming point at the center of the darkness beneath his hood and let off a burst. The shells flew straight and true and detonated harmlessly against a force field just a few scant centimeters from their target. The officers with the Magos drew las pistols and returned fire, striking Nemiel once in the leg and abdomen. Marthes shouldered his way onto the catwalk and fired his melter gun at the distant heavy bolter. The microwave burst struck the weapon and the gangway beneath it and superheated the metal in a split second, vaporizing them in a fierce concussion and hurling burning Skitarii to the assembly floor below.
"We're cut off!"
Cole shouted as he picked off another of the charging Skitarii.
"Where do we go from here?"
Nemiel glared down at Archoy. Several meters away, one of the burning Skitarii had become entangled in one of the chains on the way down, and now he thrashed and twisted in the air as the flames consumed him. On impulse, he holstered his pistol.
"Follow me,"
he said, then put a foot onto the rail and leapt into space. The thin metal of the railing bent beneath his full weight, throwing him off balance, but his leap carried him far enough to reach one of the grisly, corpse-strewn chains. He grabbed hold with one hand and slid partway down its length before the slippery metal snaked out of his hands. Nemiel fell the remaining few meters and landed atop the lead siege gun. A tech adept rose up beside him, raising a crackling arc torch, but he may as well have been moving in slow motion. The Astartes smashed the traitor aside with a sweep of his Crozius and began to run along the downward-sloping hull towards Archoy and the rebel officers.
"For the Lion!" he roared, raising the Crozius Aquilum high as he launched himself at the traitors.